I signed on to this effort to represent Growth Energy, not only, though, because I believe in America's agricultural community and rural development, but because energy independence is just an absolutely critical issue for America at this time. We've been talking about it for 35 years since I was a captain teaching economics at West Point. But with oil at $75 a barrel, as you mentioned, it's over $300 billion a year leaking out of this economy. It's a huge amount of money. It's more than we're paying for Iraq and Afghanistan. It's almost as much as we're paying in interest on our national debt. If we could keep that money in the American economy, we'd be creating jobs and building education and homes and communities with that money. And instead, it's flowing out of the country. And particularly at a time when we've got a high unemployment rate and we're desperate for job creation, I think we have to take urgent action on this issue of energy independence. And the truth is that we're not going to solve it with a hydrogen economy in the near term. As much as I love electric automobiles and wind and solar, we're not going to get there with electric automobiles. There's 250 million automobiles on the road, and almost none of them are electric today, and Americans can't afford to rush out and buy electric automobiles in a year or two, even if they were available, which they aren't. The real way we address this issue is with liquid fuels, and today we do have a liquid fuel alternative to imported oil. And that alternative is ethanol. And I'm here representing Growth Energy, and we'd like to just mention a couple of things about where we're going, because we think this is a critical opportunity for us that we must establish. This $300 billion a year, if the American people just understood it, it's $1,000 per man, woman, and child in America every year, just so we can fill up our tanks with imported oil. If a country said to us we had to pay that as tribute to maintain our freedom, we'd go to war with them. Yet we willingly pay this at the pump every time we fill up our gas. And we have a choice. We don't have to do this. The only thing that's really standing between us and keeping this $300 billion in the American economy is the resolve to fix the problem. So at Growth Energy, we hope the United States Congress will establish a national energy policy that creates jobs in the United States, improves the environment, strengthens our national security, and we hope this committee will take the lead, because this committee is at the heart of one of the great technological innovations of the 21st century, and that is biofuels. That's America's own innovation, and we're leading it with corn-based ethanol. We created it here in America. The feedstocks are grown on our nation's farms. The biorefineries are located in rural America. They're creating jobs that can't be outsourced. I was in Copenhagen for the climate summit in December, and people are coming up to me from all over the world saying, how can we have ethanol? The ambassador from Pakistan here in Washington said, General Clark, we want you to bring corn-based ethanol to Pakistan. I said, but tell me why. He says, because it creates value in our land, and it saves us foreign exchange that we need for economic development. We have this incredible jewel of innovation in America's agricultural community. We have to take advantage of it and use it, and we're calling on this community, on this committee, to take the lead in doing so. Now, right now, ethanol is about 10% of our nation's gasoline consumption, but we could do a whole lot more. And I'm not even talking cellulosic here. Cellulosic is down the road. We'll get there. But just with corn-based ethanol, every year our farmers are producing 2-3% more corn on the same acreage. And every year our ethanol refineries are getting more efficient. They're reducing costs. They're raising the net energy in ethanol. And what stands in the way is not supply. What's standing in our way is basically barriers to consumption. We're currently facing the so-called blend wall, which is the amount of ethanol that federal regulations say can be blended with gasoline. And as you know, this is capped at 10%. It's the amount that was set in 1978. So at Growth Energy, we filed a waiver with EPA in March of 2009 to raise the blend wall to allow up to 15% ethanol in a gallon of gasoline, and the waiver has yet to be acted on. EPA is awaiting tests from DOE. They were first promised they'd be complete. We'd have a decision in June, then they were delayed until August. Now maybe we're waiting till the end of the year. And I understand the need for testing. I sure understand the need for automobile makers to be concerned about liabilities and so forth. But look, if we can get this waiver approved, we'll create 136,000 new permanent jobs, maybe 250,000 construction jobs. We'll reduce our dependence on foreign oil by 7 billion gallons a year. And not only that, we'll spark a wave of development and investment in rural America. It's a big step forward, and we need to take it and raise this blend wall. We hope there'll be no more delays. As the Senate prepares to debate energy legislation, we believe it's important to address a couple of other barriers to ethanol. The biggest challenge we face is having access to an open market. Actually, the cost of production of ethanol is less than the cost of production of a gallon of gasoline right now. And we believe that ethanol can compete in a free market without government assistance if, but only if, the infrastructure barriers are removed. Last week at Growth Energy, we rolled out the Fueling Freedom Plan that urges Congress to redirect some of the government assistance into building out the infrastructure, mandating flex fuel vehicles production, and creating incentives to install blender pumps. If we had 120 million flex fuel vehicles on the road and a couple of 100,000 blender pumps nationwide so consumers could decide how much ethanol they want to put in their vehicle, well, ethanol would compete with oil, and we would save a substantial amount of that $300 billion. We're not advocating the elimination of government assistance right now. What we're saying is to redirect some of it to the infrastructure so that we can have access to the market where we can compete once that infrastructure is in place without the government assistance. I know there's vested interests out there continuing to call for the elimination of any assistance to ethanol, but I think we have to bear in mind, I know this committee will, that the amount invested by U.S. taxpayers has been a great investment. $5-6 billion a year has been invested. It's reduced government farm program costs by an equivalent amount. It's created almost 500,000 jobs. It's reduced our dependence on foreign oil, improved our environment, and helped create a $66 billion industry and lead a technological innovation that will spread worldwide and change global dynamics if we move through this. So, but we have to move forward in America. Now, President Eisenhower, he proposed an interstate highway system to give Americans freedom to travel on the great nation. I think this committee should take the lead in giving Americans freedom to choose the fuel to travel on those highways. With fossil fuels getting dirtier and costlier and riskier to extract, now's the time to expand the production and consumption of clean, renewable fuels like ethanol. They're getting increasingly efficient and easier to produce. Congress set an aggressive goal when it passed the 2007 energy bill, but unfortunately, that energy bill contained two destructive policies against agriculture and ethanol. And the first was a reference to indirect land use change, which has now been interpreted to be international indirect land use change. It's a controversial theory. It uses speculative models and incorrect assumptions, and it's basically an attempt to blame American farmers for deforestation in foreign countries such as Brazil. It's a dangerous theory. It's incorrect, and if it's allowed to stand in statute, it will ultimately take down every sector of the American economy. If you can apply this theory to agriculture, then there's nothing preventing the same theory from being applied to construction, residential homes, hospitals, highways, high-speed transit, virtually anything that uses land and impacts on our economy. So I think that we need to ask and seek the removal of this language from the legislation. The second flawed policy within this legislation is the definition of an advanced biofuel. An advanced biofuel ought to be, one would think, something that gives you a substantial measure of reduction in greenhouse gas emissions from conventional fuel like gasoline. But the definition specifically excluded cornstarch ethanol, despite the ability of cornstarch ethanol to meet and exceed these greenhouse gas thresholds and the continuous improvements in the production processes. We refer to the exclusions in the legislation as the Corn Discrimination Clause because it has absolutely nothing to do with the efficiency of production of ethanol or the environmental improvement. It's simply a discrimination against a particular feedstock. So Growth Energy strongly supports the implementation and full funding of the energy title of the Farm Bill. The committee should be commended for its work in establishing a title that recognized the ability of the agricultural community to contribute and be part of our nation's energy solution. So, Madam Chairman, if I could just have a second to summarize. We are on the verge of a technological breakthrough that could change international dynamics in the 21st century. 20th century has been all about petroleum. We fuel our militaries with it. We fight for it. We deploy our forces to protect it. It's all about the 20th century. This century could be about biofuels if we take the lead and use the technological edge that we have right now. And the leading biofuel that's available right now and that we should use without further delay is ethanol. Increased use of ethanol reduces our dependence on foreign oil, strengthens national security, creates jobs, revitalizes communities, improves our environment. It's our innovation and gift to the world. Other nations want it. We should take full advantage of what we have here at home. Again, Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I appreciate the invitation to come before your committee this morning. Thank you.